Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Drive Pink Dialogue. This is episode number 19. As always, I'm your host, Scotty. I'm here with my co-host, Soar. Are you ready for a group therapy session?
Yeah, more than ready. I think there are some weekends where I just absolutely despise this game. And I think this weekend is one of them. So, and as you can see, we're unplanned, coordinated morning attire that we're both wearing. So definitely ready for some therapy session.
It definitely feels like a funeral with us both going in dark clothing. Before we get started on the game, because that's going to be the major topic of this episode, we are looking at a team that has a bunch of injuries, and we'll talk about some of the shorter-term ones. But before we do, I want to talk about Federico Redondo. We mentioned it a little bit on the pregame show yesterday, but I felt he was warranting of a longer conversation about who he has been as a player since he got here and what type of impact we'll be missing with him not on the pitch for the next 2 months or so.
He's a very important player, as he's shown in the last couple of games. I think the profile that he brings to this team, we don't necessarily have a direct replacement. And in the game, especially against New York Red Bulls, we were screaming for someone who can carry the ball, for someone who can be press resistant. He's obviously not as athletic as Diego Gomez or maybe even Yannick Bright, but he still brings in a lot of strength and quality on the ball, and he's really good at distribution. 8 weeks out without him, it's going to be a long 8 weeks because we were finally starting to settle into our midfield. We were finally starting to settle into a balance. And now we find ourselves short on that position. And it's one of our key players, one of our starters. So ahead of the game against Monterrey, I'm really, really worried about this midfield. I think we have the tools to kind of plug in for the short term. But if this injury, as we see it in 8 weeks, if this is longer than that, we're practically screwed. So let's hope that he comes back fit quick. He comes back all guns blazing as soon as possible, because we definitely need him going forward into the season.
Yeah, just based on the progression we saw in his first four games with the team, I would have thought he had a chance to be the best midfielder in the MLS in 8 weeks. And instead, we're just not going to see him for 8 weeks. It's really tough blow. It's an injury he should come back from without too much trouble. But it's still really frustrating to see with a young player. And this team is now littered with injuries, and it feels like we will never get healthy. It feels like we were just about rounding the corner on our roster, coming together. We brought in the right back. Messi and Frede were, you know, day-to-day at this point, and then this happens. So frustrating, really frustrating. That midfield with Busquets, Redondo, and Diego Gomez looked like a world-beating midfield, and here we are without Redondo. Busquets back to maybe not being his best, although in this game he was out of position. And we had to try basically a whole new midfield last night. Let's get into the game. Pre-game lineup, big shock right off the bat. Sergio Busquets as a center back. We talked about it in the pre-game show, but what, you know, now that we've seen it, now that you've had time to digest it, because we were sort of digesting it as we were talking yesterday, how do you feel about Sergio Busquets as a center back, and maybe talk about that Ryan Saylor, Sergio Busquets partnership?
When we first saw that lineup, we both, I think, started laughing because this was not what anybody expected. Sergio Busquets plugging into the center back role, maybe it was to not have him run as much in the midfield as he would have had to, and, you know, give him a little bit of a rest in the center back position ahead of the Monterrey game. We would have expected Noah Allen to come in and fill that gap, but it was a big surprise. Again, Ryan Saylor as well, a massive surprise in that back line. I thought Ryan Saylor did well. We're going to talk about him more in detail later on, but I think the back line as a whole did decent. They weren't too bad, they weren't the best. But the goal that we conceded came from the Jordi Alba, Sergio Busquets side. And I would say it was as much of an error of Jordi Alba giving the ball away as Sergio Busquets being out of position. And he was out of position because his instinct is of a central defensive midfielder, not of a center back. So we conceded because we had a player playing in a in a different position. But overall, I think this team did enough to beat NYCFC, and this team was set up to be competitive, and I think we should have gotten all 3 points. There were holes. We did concede a few chances to NYCFC as well, but overall, I think we were the better team. So as an afterthought, I think we could have easily beaten the NYCFC team with this lineup.
Yeah, we'll talk about NYCFC a little bit later, and we'll go into the specifics of that goal. But I think we both would have put, you know, we like to play the circle the lineup game of the thing we're most concerned about in the pregame show. We both would have circled Sergio Busquets at center back, but we kind of outlawed that because of how shocking it was. I circled Ryan Saylor as the guy that I was nervous about. I believe that you had Julian Gressel and Marcelo Wiegand, and neither of those two were the reason that we didn't get the result we wanted last night. A little surprising. This lineup played decently enough, you know what I mean? And considering we're down three center backs, or at least two and a half, because clearly Avilés wasn't ready to go, the lineup was like fine. It was, I can't complain too much about Tata's 11, maybe how the players reacted to it. And we'll get to that when we talk about the goal, but it's really hard to complain about it. We saw Marcelo Wiegand, who this was his first game, and eventually I'll start calling him Cello, but it still hasn't clicked in my brain yet. He was solid. Tata threw him right in, just like he's prone to do when a new player comes in. Yannick Bright, his first career start, you know, we just signed him last week, and now he's getting thrown into the Wolves in a game that we should have won. We'll talk about the midfield a little bit later too, but any other top line thoughts about the lineup? It kind of felt like once we got over the Busquets news, it made a lot of sense, I think.
Yeah, and I think it was a game of many emotions for me as a viewer, because for the first 35 minutes, I was sitting there. I was like, oh, we're coasting. This is going to be an absolute drubbing. And I was thinking to myself that this is probably the best depth that MLS has on any team. And I was really, really content with the way we were playing for the first 35 minutes. Then we conceded, and I was like, that's all right. We'll come back and score. And then the second half started, and we didn't score. And then it was 80th minute, and we still didn't score. And that's when I was like, this game is an absolute atrocity. So it was a game of many emotions. For large parts of it, I don't think the personnel on the field or the lineup itself was to blame as such. I think the team was set up to win, and they were able and capable of winning against this NYCFC team. The result was just so frustrating.
Yeah, Inter Miami without 8 players yesterday to injury. Some of them are long-term, Ian Frey, Facu Farias, Benjamin Kramaski, but some of them are sort of short term and things that we didn't even see coming last week when, you know, we're talking about Redondo, we're talking about Christoph. Lionel Messi is a guy that we thought might be available a week ago for this game. And so it was a depleted team, but I think you make a good point. It was a sign of our depth, where I still think we had a much better, more talented roster starting 11 without 8 players that are, for the most part, impact players, and one of them being Lionel Messi. So it was cool to see that we had an 11 that we felt confident in, even if Busquets was out of position. But, you know, obviously we didn't get the result we wanted. Let's get into the game. First half, let's just get into the goals, because there was a lot of chances that we could talk about, missed opportunities for both sides. But let's just get into the goals and have a little bit of a deeper discussion about them. In the 14th minute, Inter Miami takes the lead. Julian Gressel it's a set piece. Julian Gressel puts a nice cross in. Luis Suarez, the guy guarding him, James Stance, sort of falls on the play. He thinks he got pushed. Either way, Luis Suarez is wide open. Easy header for him. I mean, it was a nice header. He redirected it exactly where it needed to go, but it's kind of what you'd expect from Luis Suarez. Inter Miami takes a 1-0 lead in the 14th minute, and I think we're about to win this game 4-0.
Yeah, I think it was a fantastic ball. Good run by Luis Suarez. I'm not sure if it was a foul on his marker, and a good header, a really good header, cushioned into the corner completely. The keeper couldn't do anything about it. But you could see signs of us playing fluid, solid football. The passing was really crisp before that. The midfield was really open, so our players were finding a lot of spaces. And it was looking good, and I agree with you. I thought this was going to be like a 3-0, 4-0 game because I just didn't see how the New York team would threaten us, and we were looking on top for the first 20 minutes. So, yeah, that goal came at a good time, and great ball by Gressel, and I'm glad he got that assist.
Yeah, it's his third assist of the season. I think that he had a pretty decent game by his standards on that right wing. But yeah, it felt like Inter Miami was just going to roll over NYCFC. They had a few more chances. They had a chance in the 12th minute that Diego Gomez had a really nice ball to David Ruiz, who Ruiz headed it. It was saved. Ruiz might have been able to take a touch. But either way, they were coming. They were creating chances. It felt not as easy as the Orlando City game, but sort of along those same lines where we were moving the ball really easily. We were creating chances. We were getting good, you know, run. Guys were getting open. They had smart runs, and it was just like easy, smooth, fluid. And then NYCFC scores, and it was like, how did that just happen? 34th minute, Alonso Martinez gets the goal, but really the play is made where Sergio Busquets and Jordi Alba are chasing a ball by the sideline. Jordi Alba calls off Sergio Busquets right before he gets to it, and then he tries to make a play, pushes it forward, and it goes right off the NYCFC defender, creates a transition opportunity where both Jordi Alba and Sergio Busquets are just completely out of position. And, you know, no, there was no defender that had an opportunity to make that save. It was just Drake Callender or nothing. Alonso Martinez does go near post. Drake Callender probably should have done better. Not a goal that you blame Drake Callender for giving up, but you probably do want to see him do better on the near post. But either way, it's 1-1. Still, it was like Inter Miami has been dominating this game. How is this a tie game? And also, I still feel pretty good about us getting the result in the end.
Yeah, just before that goal, I was thinking to myself, oh, we're really playing well against the press. I thought Yannick Bright was doing really well in keeping the ball against the press. Jelle Wiegand was doing really well in beating the press and taking the pressure on. Even though the NYC press wasn't nearly as potent or dangerous as we saw against maybe DC United or the New York Red Bulls. But then that crazy moment happens where Drake Callender sort of passes the ball to the sidelines, hoping that Jordi Alba gets onto it. I have no idea why Sergio Busquets pushed so far out of position for that, because he could have clearly seen in his peripheral vision that Jordi Alba was also available to take that ball on. And then Jordi Alba calls out, Sergio Busquets leaves that ball for him and then doesn't get back into position. And the first thing I thought about was, he's playing like a CDM right now, because that's his instinct of going for that ball. Jordi Alba just has a shocker of a pass and then is just wide open in that back on that area. And I remember, I think it was Anton during our pre-game discussion who said that comment about Alba and Sergio Busquets not being the best defensive duo on the left side. And it turned out that he was exactly right in that sense. Great shot. Again, I agree with you. It was on the near post. Callender should have done better, potentially even saved it. But you can't really blame him too much on it. Unfortunate that we went 1-1. But again, I just shrugged it off. I was like, we'll get back one. And I was expecting the game to be a 3-1 or maybe a 2-1. But I thought we would get one back fairly soon. And boy, I was wrong.
Yeah, that Alba goal, that Alba pass, which was really quite poor, especially in the situation, was like it just came out of everything's going well, everything's flowing right, and I can just do this because things are going right today. And it was like a confidence that had been built up over the first 35 minutes that he felt he could do that, and obviously it didn't come off, and it ended up changing the whole game. It's hard for me to blame Busquets because he is a DM by nature. And also when Drake Callender passed the ball, he was the closest person to it. You know, the only reason Alba got to it first is because he's quicker, but also he calls off Busquets to, you know, let him take the ball with momentum going forward. Really a tough play. And I'm sure we'll talk about it a little bit later when we go to awards. But let's move on. Second half, Inter Miami somehow finds themselves down 1-1, even though they're, in my opinion, the better team, moving the ball freely. Diego Gomez is having a good game. That midfield was really doing well. We'll talk about them more. But it just never came in the second half, that breakaway goal. I talked about at halftime, I think I tweeted it, that let's try and put the game away in these first 5-10 minutes, get the guys to rest. We got a big game on Wednesday. And it just never came. I highlighted some of the best chances. Jordi Alba set up Luis Suarez for a chance in the 56th minute. That was saved by Matt Fries. We had an opportunity off a corner that landed at the feet of Suarez, who shot. That also was saved by Matt Fries. That was in the 60th minute. Gressel has a nice cross in that's just past the outstretched leg of Luis Suarez in the 66th minute. Diego Gomez had a nice touch around Thiago Martins, and he finds Luis Suarez, but Suarez can't put it on frame. That was in the 71st minute. And then there was the nicest opportunity we had. Marcelo Wiegand sort of plays as a hold-up striker and then dumps it off to Luis Suarez, making a run. And another really nice save by Matt Fries. So five really good opportunities in that second half, and all of them to Luis Suarez, who has been so clinical, so good this season, and none of them come off. And instead, the game ends 1-1.
Yeah. I was looking at the XG, and it's about 2.8 for Inter Miami, of which 2.12 XG is Luis Suarez. He could have had four goals. Those weren't just chances. Those were really, really good chances. He shot one wide that I thought he, on any other day, he would have shot it into the corner. The pass from Jordi Alba to set Suarez up as well was absolutely, like, completely cut through the NYCFC defense. Should have done better one-on-one with the goalkeeper. Matt Fries had some really, really good saves there. And yeah, if it was any other day, Suarez would have bagged a few more. And I thought it was poor from him this entire game. It just wasn't happening for him. He was making the runs. He was getting into the right positions, but he just didn't have his shooting boots on today. And that was unfortunate. I just want to point out, we didn't mention that there were also chances created by NYCFC there in the first half a couple of times, and then the second half, which were quite clear cut, but they just couldn't finish. I think in the first half, they had a direct in the box cutback that Bakrar, I think, just shot it over the bar to the, you know, infinite stand. And then in the second half as well, at the start, I think they hit the post once and they had a couple of other chances. So they were threatening. And if they'd finished their chances, this game would have been completely different as well. But even then, we had more chances. We had more clear-cut opportunities that we should have definitely capitalized on and done better with. So it is really unfortunate to come back out of this game just 1-1. But I think this was a game where we could have scored a lot more.
Yeah, let's come back to the NYCFC chances in a few minutes, because we'll talk about them as a team a little bit, you know, in a few minutes. But just coming back to these chances, and Luis Suarez specifically, it felt to me at one point that he got flustered. I kind of pinpointed this 71st minute shot that Diego Gomez sets him up for, and he kind of can't put it on target. You could see he was frustrated. He was flustered. As much as he can lose confidence, it felt like his confidence had dipped a little bit. I know he had that chance about 10 minutes later, but from that 70th minute on, it felt like he had already sort of lost that clinical confidence, that I'm going to do it no matter what confidence that he seemingly always has. Credit to Matt Fries, who I think we both agree was the man of the match overall, because he did make some really nice saves on Luis Suarez, but Suarez, I think, definitely could have handled a few of those better. So I agree with you on that.
Yeah, and I think more than him of course, he was definitely frustrated, but more than him losing confidence, I think he was just trying too hard, because he was like, oh, I'm getting all these chances. I have to score one of them. And I think he just tried a little bit too hard, placed it in the wrong direction sometimes, hit it too hard straight at the keeper sometimes. And it just wasn't his night. And that can happen for a striker. But I was actually screaming at my screen for Tata to sub him off and get Campana on, because you could see that this is heading into a dangerous direction where Suarez might get a red card just because of how frustrated he is. And I'm sure we're going to discuss substitutions later on. But I think that was the chance at around the 70th minute where you should have taken Suarez on and put someone else on, Suarez off and put someone else on just to give him a rest ahead of Monterrey and to stop, you know, him getting more frustrated, because it just wasn't his night, even though he scored a goal.
Yeah, he does get the yellow card, which was purely out of frustration. Some nice time wasting by NYCFC that really got to him, but you could tell he was just his, you know, he wasn't calm and collective and cool like he has normally been in the box. All that said, he did have another great opportunity in the 80th minute. So, you know, if he puts that in the back of the net, he's the hero and we win and we all feel really good today. So hard to blame Tata for leaving Suarez on when the game is in that situation. But like you said, we'll talk about the substitutes in a little bit. Okay, let's talk about NYCFC, because nothing about last night's game changed my mind about who they are as a team. I think they're probably the worst team in MLS this year. I haven't seen all the Western Conference teams, but NYCFC is really bad. They had only scored 3 goals in their first 5 games. They don't really have anyone that is a guy you're scared of going forward. Their midfield's solid, but their defense is nothing to write home about. I didn't think they played very well last night. I don't think they did it. You know, they had, like you said, they had 3 or 4 chances that were right there for the taking if they put them on target, and they didn't just miss the net. They missed the net by like 3 or 4 yards. It was really embarrassing. Their striker is bad. I know he's struggling to adapt to MLS, but whew, it was bad. And we still didn't get a victory. But let's talk about NYCFC for a little bit.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. That game did not change my mind about NYCFC at all. If anything, it changed my mind about Inter Miami and what we can do against such teams. Overall, I think they started off this game fairly hesitant. I think they got dominated for the first 35 minutes. They left a lot of spaces in the midfield. Our midfielders were very energetic and athletic to win the ball very quickly. They had a fair few turnovers. Even by their standards, there were instances where they just completely passed the ball off wrong, whether it was their number 10 or, you know, someone who's actually their creative outlet. He was also giving the ball away. Sands was giving the ball away, who's the Mr. Dependable in their team. So even by their poor standards, they were quite bad in that first 35-40 minutes. And they still managed to score. And we conceded chances to them, which were very clear-cut chances. Now, I would give the chances, I would excuse giving them the chances out of the pure fact that our backline was basically constructed overnight. So that, I guess, is, you know, allowed, excusable. But to not score against NYCFC, which, as you said, is probably the poorest team in the MLS, and not win against them at home, that's a really damning result. Like, it's a really, really poor result that we're going to look back on and wonder how we didn't get all 3 points here. And I agree with you. They weren't great. They weren't tactically amazing. I think we were dominating them most of the time. And the fact that we were playing on basically coastal speed for the largest points in the game worked in their favor, because I think we got complacent at times and we thought we would eventually score, which we didn't. So, yeah, overall, a team we could have definitely beaten.
Yeah, I'm thinking back to their chances, and it was like, it wasn't great run of play by them. It was like a few bad turnovers that they had transition opportunities on, a few set pieces, but like nothing you can't chalk up to just Sergio Busquets not being a true center back. And then the fullbacks bombing forward. And so we just had a numbers disadvantage, but they weren't able to capitalize on any of them. So it's like hard for me to like take them that seriously, because if they capitalize on all of them, this scoreline could have gone bad the other way. Matt Fries, though, was good. I don't think he's an excellent goalkeeper, but I think he had an excellent game last night. I think he finished with 5 or 6 saves, but all of them were like quality big saves from point blank. And he was really good, man. Tell me about Matt Freeze.
Yeah, he prevented 1.29 goals, which doesn't necessarily tell the whole story, but he had 5 saves inside the box, which is basically saying that he got shot at point blank and he saved 5 of those.
And five, I think he was really good. 5 from like Luis Suarez, not just maybe David Ruiz was one of them. So 4 from Luis Suarez, but like you're not talking about bombs from like the far corner of the box. These were like point blank, inside 10 yards, like great opportunities, and he saved
great chances. Yeah, and I think after he saved the first couple, it just his confidence went off the roof, and he probably was like, you know what, I'm not letting any other pass tonight. I don't think he could have done much on the first goal. It was really well-placed header, and I think the entire team was caught off guard as such. But for the rest of them, he was well-positioned. Some of them were shot straight at him, so made it easier. But he had good reflexes. I think he played really well. And overall, a great game. He had a great game in a not-so-fantastic game overall. So good for him.
There was a couple saves where it was like, you know, a professional goalkeeper gets that once every 2 games or maybe 3 games, and he had like 4 of them last night. So really just tough to have that be the guy you're going against, and this just being that week that he does that, because it's really, really frustrating. And obviously Luis Suarez felt the same way.
And the prime example of that was, I think, the Suarez one-on-one opportunity where he was slipped in by Jordi Alba, I believe. He had a clear-cut chance one-on-one in the first half. And Matt Freeze was really quick coming off his lines and just, you know, completely shutting off all angles that Suarez might have had. So I think that was less Suarez messing up that one-on-one chance and more Matt Freeze actually doing a good goalkeeping job. So, yeah, he had a great game.
Yeah, that was another chance that we didn't mention, but just adds to the quality chances that this team had. Okay, let's talk about Miami. Is there anything else about NYCFC that you want to talk about? Because it wasn't like that. I wasn't impressed with anyone on their team other than Matt Freeze, who had a good game. Like they didn't seem dangerous. They didn't seem clinical on the ball. They didn't have great patterns of play.
I don't know. I'll just say after the 60th minute, we sort of played into their hands, because I think after the 65th, 70th minute, they were happy to take that draw. And there was a lot of time wasting, which we'll talk about. There was a lot of frustrating lulls in the game. And there was a lot of stop and start, which completely played into their hands. And I think we just fell into their trap of, you know, not having any fluidity in the game. And I was screaming at the screen because I just wanted someone to do something and energize the game, maybe even get a red card. Because that would have probably put some life into this game, you know, put in a challenge or something. But after the 70th minute, it was just dead, and that worked in NYCFC's favor.
Yeah, I completely agree, especially after the 80th. You know, we had that one chance in the 80th minute where Luis Suarez kind of gets a point-blank opportunity that's provided to him by Marcelo Wiegand. And after that, there was still 19 more minutes of game time, and we didn't look dangerous at all. We didn't even do a good job of getting past halfway, especially in extra time. Let's talk about that, because 9 minutes go up, which felt appropriate based on how much time wasting there were. I was nervous we were going to get like 4 minutes, and we got 9. I thought 8 or 9 was appropriate, and we did nothing with it. How disappointing was that? Because we created plenty of chances throughout the game, and it did feel like we were sort of buying into what playing the way they wanted us to play over the last 10 minutes of regulation, maybe a little bit longer. How disappointing was it to not have like an extra gear for those last few minutes where it felt like the game was there for the taking when 99 minutes went up and we just, you know, we didn't create anything?
I think those 9 extra minutes perfectly summed up the frustrations that we as fans have for this Inter Miami team at times this season, because they just fall into this sense of paralysis and lethargy where absolutely nothing happened. Of those 9 minutes, 7.5 were just us passing it between our center backs and Sergio Busquets in our own half. And I was literally looking at it and I was shocked because there was no impetus or no motivation to go and score a goal in extra time. And as soon as I saw 9 minutes up, I was like, oh, this is it. It's perfectly scripted. We're going to score one. And in fact, the best opportunity in those 9 minutes came for NYCFC, which Drake Callender saved. So that just speaks volumes as to how this game went. And I really worry about the mentality of the players at that time because nothing, not even a single forward pass for the first 7 minutes is absolutely dreadful. And I'm not sure what they were thinking, whether they were...
I can tell you exactly what happened. I can tell you exactly what happened.
Please do, because I can't rationalize it in my head.
No. It makes perfect sense. In the 77th minute, we took off Julian Gressel and Robert Taylor, and we put on Pep Casas and Leo Afonso. And the two, our two wingers, I mean, we've known since the pregame that this midfield wasn't going to be a dynamic creative force. And yes, Diego Gomez had some nice creative opportunity. He created a few nice opportunities, but you knew you were going to need offense from your wingers and you, or from your front three, and you took off Robert Taylor and you took off Julian Gressel for two players that you signed from the B team earlier today. Maybe this is a good time to talk about the substitutes, because you had Leo Campana, a DP striker, on the bench when you needed a goal, and instead they used two rookies that aren't even signed to first team contracts that you drafted from college that are like, please, that's the rationalization on why our offense died. Yes, Marcelo Wiegand and Suarez created one opportunity in the 80th minute, but from that substitution period on, our team was ineffective. They created virtually nothing other than that one opportunity going forward. And the reason you had Suarez and Busquets and Aviles and Ryan Saylor kicking the ball between each other, it's because there was no outlets to go to moving forward. I know Alba and Marcelo Wiegand were trying to do something, but that was the only focal point that NYC had to account for in order to completely shut down anything Inter Miami wanted to do.
Remind me what the midfield was. Sorry, remind me what the midfield was at the end of the game by the 90th minute. It was Diego
Ruiz, Gomez and Busquets.
Yeah, so I still don't see... I get what you mean. I completely agree with you that Gomez and Ruiz are not necessarily the creative outlets that we want them to be, and thus we rely on our, you know, wing play to get the ball forward. And when we have Casas and Afonso in, who are... And I'm not blaming them by any means at all. The rookie players who, you know, are still settling into this team. Yeah. But I would still expect Busquets to try and do a line breaking pass to Gomez, who can then turn and, you know, maybe run, just something to happen. It was just a weird 7-8 minutes in that added time. And maybe you're right. Maybe the fact that we had taken off Gressel and Robert Taylor really exposed our creative fallacies there, because maybe those two were the ones who were actually making things move, even by just their movement and stuff, you know, allowing spaces. So maybe that is the reason, but I don't see that as an excuse, especially with the experience of someone like Sergio Busquets. And Diego Gomez is now slowly, you know, becoming the senior midfielder in this team with Redondo out as well. So we would expect them to take the ball and do something with it. Even if it's a long ball, just pop it up and see what Suarez can do with it. Just do something there.
It was a weird one. Once you take Gressel and Suarez and Robert Taylor off, you don't have anyone to go long to, because those guys aren't making effective runs beyond the defense. And Luis Suarez is not a traditional target man like that. And so maybe if you had put Leo Campana on the field, you would have someone to pass the ball off to. Let's talk about the substitutes, because...
Yeah.
Again, it's not Pep Casas' fault or Leo Afonso's fault that they didn't come in and impact the game, but also you shouldn't be putting them in that situation. That's not good coaching. These are young guys and you want them to develop and you want them to be comfortable and confident in that situation, in this league, at this level. You got to put them in positions to succeed, and that wasn't it. I'm sorry, but this was like, We've been very critical of the 3-5-2, but this might have been the worst individual decision we've seen from Tata all season. You know, I'm sure I'm forgetting a couple things, but that it was like a really bad decision. You have Franco Negri on the bench, who is a proven offensive threat at this level. You have, and by the way, he would have been a better winger than Afonso or Pep Casas. You know, move Jordi Alba up to the left wing and have Negri be the left back. Campana would have been a better winger than either of these players. I know he's a striker, but still, you know, go to a 4-4-2 with the two strikers up top. Do something better than that, because you're just putting, you know, Schneider Borjan was on the bench. You can throw him in there for long balls. And all of a sudden you're creating like an opportunity that makes sense to score goals. And whether it works or not is, you know, we'll never know. But at least in that sense, you've created opportunities that make sense, as opposed to putting these two guys that neither of them are incredibly dangerous. I know Afonso scored a few goals for the B team, but they don't have a proven track record of that. And Casas is like more of a midfielder than a winger anyways. I'm sorry. I'm going to stop ranting for a second. Go ahead.
I'll pick up the rant for you. And I completely agree here. I think this game was on Tata through and through. I think his lineup was okay. I'm sure when we saw this lineup, all of us were, you know, confused, didn't understand why he picked this lineup. But I think what he put on the field was definitely able and capable of winning this game. His in-game adjustments were absolutely atrocious. Yes, we had Yannick Bright come off injured. Okay, he put Aviles on, Sergio Busquets moved back into the midfield. That was fine, that was doable. But there were so many other different approaches he could have taken if he wanted to change the game, because NYC did not have any potent attacking threat in that second half. They were...
Can I just stop you for a second? Does he make that change if Yannick Bright doesn't get hurt? Or are we just sticking with that 11 for the whole game? Because that change was dictated by an injury. But the only two substitutes that he made for like either tactical or rest reasons were putting the two B team players on.
You got Noah Allen on the bench. You got Franco Negri on the bench. Even push Jordi Alba in the center. You've seen Jordi Alba control the play from the midfield at a point of the game where NYC does not have any wing threat at all. Just push Jordi Alba in the center, because I think Jordi Alba did not have a great game on that left back side. He wasn't as threatening going forward as he normally is. And I would have just pushed him central, taken Sergio Busquets off because we have a game against Monterrey on Wednesday, put Aviles on. There's so many different combinations and permutations that you can do in this game that would allow us to actually change certain things. And it was so frustrating seeing both Alfonso and Casas, not because I don't trust them as players, but just seeing them being put in that situation.
We haven't seen them do anything.
Exactly. I mean, like, you, and it's, I feel bad for them for being put in that situation. And the only thing I can think of to rationalize this is that Tata was like, all right, we'll be happy with the 1-1. That's the only thing that, you know, justifies that decision, because we've got so many players, and Campana not even getting a run out is an absolute travesty. That makes no sense. I would have taken Suarez off and put Campana on just out of the sheer fact that Suarez was struggling to finish the chances. And I'm 100% sure if Campana had that 80th minute chance with Regan pulling back that ball in for Suarez, he would have scored or at least been on target. So rant over.
Okay. So this was supposed to be our therapy session about last night. And I was so unbelievably frustrated with how the game played out in that second half, or, you know, throughout the game, really. There was like not a sense of urgency. And we had gone through the first 35 minutes of this episode and not let the frustration go out. And I think we just found where it really is, because again, it's just so frustrating to see that be the one real change that Tata Martino made in a game where we were the better team. We should have won. We were creating better chances. And the only thing he did made it worse for our team, had less goal scorers. I mean, again, Leo Afonso, Pep Casas, they made their professional debut a week ago. They have no career goals. They have no career XG or XA or anything. Like, there's no reason to think that they were going to come on and make the difference. And you have Schneider, Borgelin, you have, and then especially Leo Campana, who is your DP striker, available, put him up there, even if it's not to replace Luis Suarez. Like, even if you think, okay, Luis Suarez is going to come good, I can rationalize that, but not putting Leo Campana or even Schneider Borgelin out there on that right wing instead of Casas. You know, maybe Leo Alfonso gives you a little bit more athleticism, but so frustrating. And that was the one adjustment he made the entire game.
And I'll be honest, it wasn't just for this game, right? These tactical adjustments that he made, the substitutions that he made, made absolutely no sense for the upcoming Monterrey game. That just goes to show that there was no cohesive, cognizant plan from this game onto the Monterrey game. You're giving Alba, Sergio Busquets, and Luis Suarez 90 minutes on the pitch when they're going to 99 minutes on the pitch when they're going to be playing against Monterrey, probably the best team in CONCACAF, on Wednesday away as well. Do you know how draining that can be? And the fact that we've got a proven striker sitting on the bench, the fact that we've got Franco Negri sitting on the bench, who I think needs to get some minutes so that he's prepared to come off, he's prepared to come on eventually against Monterrey or in the future games. This was the perfect chance to give him that run out. And he just refused to. So, yeah, really worrying signs all along, not just for the tactical adjustments in this game, but just the general planning for future games as well. And yeah, it just really rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah, I should have mentioned this earlier, but now that we're into it, I think if Noah Allen starts at center back instead of Busquets, that first goal doesn't happen for NYCFC just because he's not in that position and he has the athleticism to get back and stop it. Okay, I wasn't even planning to talk about this today, but this is a great question and I have a thought on it. We've seen the 3-5-2 and we've rationalized why he's had to do it. Maybe we didn't rationalize it so well in the preseason, but he moved away from it. But talk to me about Tata Martino's job security, because I do have a thought on this that, but I want to hear what you have to say first.
In the long term, hold on.
Let me give you some stats that may provide clarity on this conversation. We're only 9 games into the season, so keep that in mind. But this team has a worse winning percentage in 2024, just in the competitive games, right, since the regular season started, than Inter Miami had in 2023 when they were the third worst team in the MLS. Just keep that in mind. The last 4 games, Inter Miami's hosted Montreal, not a superb team. They've gone on the road to DC United, who's a decent team. They've gone on the road to the New York Red Bulls, and they've played at home against NYCFC, who might be the worst team in the league. And they've gotten 4 points from those 12 potential points, when in reality, looking forward to them, Inter Miami probably should have gotten, you know, 10 to 12. Okay. Tata Martino, go ahead.
At this point in time, I don't see his job being under pressure. I know the statistics aren't pretty, but obviously he's dealing with a lot of injuries. There's no consistency to the players that he has available to select from, and he's trying to make the most of the situation. And we're still prioritizing some of the other games, such as the CONCACAF, over the MLS. So I can see why our start to the MLS season or just the overall statistics don't look as great. So I think at this point in time, he's still got the confidence of the, you know, the locker room, and he's still got the confidence of the management team. But I don't necessarily, I don't want to be the one to be like, oh no, he's not the coach for this team. So what I'm going to say is, I'm not a big fan of the way he uses players out of positions. I'm a big admirer of continuity and trying to be consistent in making sure each player on the team knows their role. I think Tata tinkers around a lot in terms of playing Ruiz in the right back position, even if that's a plug-in. I would rather use Boatwright, who is a natural right back, who we're building on to try and take that second position, like, you know, be that backup right back role. I would use him, trust him a little bit, give him that run out, then use David Ruiz in that position. I'm losing my capability to talk right now because of how flustered I am. But yeah, I'm not a big fan of him doing the plug and play where he tries to put the players in different positions to try and make the most out of them. I feel like every player in the roster needs to know their role. Every player needs to know how and when they contribute to this team. And that's how you get the best out of this team. The fact that this is probably the best roster put together in the MLS, the fact that on paper, this looks like a fantastic team who should be beating someone like a Montreal and someone like an NYCFC at home, regardless of the injuries, and the fact that we're losing those games or drawing those games and dropping points doesn't bode well, because I think that's the problem of the coaching and the tactics, and that's not the problem of the personnel.
Here's the thing. Tata Martino was hired after we knew that we were going to get Lionel Messi. We signed Lionel Messi last July, or, you know, whether he signed in late June or early July, he makes his debut July 21st. We signed Sergio Busquets. We signed Jordi Alba. We signed Diego Gomez. We signed Tota Viles. This last winter, we signed Julian Gressel, Luis Suarez, etc. Tata Martino was like part of that incoming wave of quote unquote talent. He was supposed to be a huge upgrade on Phil Neville. But you don't bring in Tata Martino in order to develop your young players, in order to create a really nice system. That's not why he's here. He's not here to make sure you play beautiful soccer. He's not here to make sure that your fans go home happy every game. He's here for one thing, and that's to win trophies. So I have no problem with Inter Miami, anything that's happened. I mean, I have like personal frustrations, but I don't think it implies anything about Tata Martino's job status. That can change in the next week and a half. If Inter Miami don't advance past Monterrey in this next 2 weeks, because they have the talent on the roster, I think Tata Martino and criticism towards him and whether he is the right guy for this job is fully warranted at that point. Right now, no, I'm not going to go for it, because they could have hired a coach that was going to really help develop all these young, talented players they have. They could have hired a coach that was going to bring in a really nice structure, right? That's what Montreal did. They brought in Courtois, was going to bring in that 3-4-2-1 from Columbus. They could have brought in a guy that, they could have brought in a guy like Xavi or someone that's Messi's best friend, and we could have just played best friends around here. But Tata Martino is a guy who's had success in this league, winning trophies. He's been around for a long time. He's been around superstars, and he supposedly knows how to get the best out of them, and he knows how to do it in this league. So it's trophy winning time at Inter Miami. That's just what it is. If they lost last night, if they win on Wednesday and they win convincingly, or they win enough to win the tie, right? If they win the tie next Wednesday, I don't care about last night's game. It was frustrating. We had this conversation, and I had to let some of my frustration out, but none of that matters if they win the trophies that they're supposed to win. They've announced this is the one that they really care about. This is the only one that is happening now. So obviously precedence, this is the most important one. If Inter Miami doesn't advance in this tournament, if they don't make a run at the title in this tournament, it's all fair game for Tata Martino. That's especially true if Lionel Messi's healthy over the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, I completely agree with you there. And as I said, like these last few MLS games, we haven't necessarily been playing to, you know, the result doesn't matter as much as it would maybe further down into the season. And right now, our focus is to try and get through the CONCACAF. But there's just this worrying sign with this team in general that I am starting to see a pattern with how this team plays in moments. There are moments that we're definitely the best team on the pitch and we will blow any other opposition out of the water that's put in front of us. And then there are moments where there's just so much, and I've used this word so many times now, there's just so much lethargy, paralysis, and it's just pedestrian pace that which they play. And That's happened in every single game that I've seen, where I've been wanting to have someone on the pitch who just injects that energy. Leo Messi has been that player for us who just turns up the energy and the heat when it needs to be turned up. But I've not seen this team play a full 90 minutes where they're just gung-ho and full of energy and just completely demolishing the opposition that we would expect them to. Now, whether that's going to go into the season and develop as we go, as we move forward, I'm not sure. But I think this team's starting to build this really bad habit of getting complacent halfway through the game and, you know, letting chances pass, which eventually costs us the game. And just being too slow in their passing, being too pedestrian in the way we're approaching the game. And then you pick it up again, like, towards the end of the game. But there's not been a full 90 minutes performance where I've been wholly satisfied with this Inter Miami team. Not even the Orlando game, I think.
Yeah. And listen, everything you've said over the last 10 minutes is true. And it's just like, my point is that everything is forgiven if you win the trophies. Doesn't exactly. matter how you look doing it. And so once you fail to win the trophies, and listen, he won the League's Cup last year, but he didn't win the US Open Cup. He didn't win. He didn't make the playoffs. He wouldn't have made the CONCACAF Champions Cup this year. You know, the number of points we've gotten per game is actually not that impressive now after losing last week and getting a draw this week. So yes, we're going to make the playoffs this year, but not, you know, at this rate, we're not in a position to challenge for the Supporters Shield. All of that gets forgiven if you win the trophies. Once you don't win the trophies, all of those things that you mentioned become hyper important, because then it's like, what are you doing? You know, what are we doing? How are we making progress towards winning trophies? How are we getting better? How are we becoming more cohesive? You have all the talent in the world, literally. Like, what's going on here? So anything you want to say else before we move on? Because that was a nice 15-minute rant, and I think that's really what was boiling my blood over the last 18 hours or so.
Yeah, and you're right. This was a rant that we needed to get off our chests. And of course, this is wholly contingent on the game that we saw yesterday. So we don't want to be the trumpet bearers for the bad news and, you know, raise our arms about Tata out movement already. This is not why we're here. We're just trying to rationalize why the situation is the way it is. And it was a tough game yesterday to watch. So I think this discussion is definitely warranted, but all of this can change in the long term. And we're hoping it changes in the long term.
Okay. Let's talk about the midfield, because I quite liked it. David Ruiz, Diego Gomez, Yannick Bright for the first 65 minutes until Yannick Bright gets hurt. Diego Gomez is as good as he's been. In fact, I think he was even a little better. He might get an award later. David Ruiz was sort of like the little brother of Diego Gomez, where he was also causing a lot of havoc in that midfield. He was he had some really nice technical moments, and I think he's improved since last year. He was really impressive in this game. And then Yannick Bright, really good positioning. I know he had a few, you know, a turnover or a bad foot here or there, but you know, this is his first professional start, second professional game. So I think we can easily forgive that. And defensively, he was finding the right spots. He was turning out of potential tackles. He was pretty good on safe on the ball. I thought it went really well for the midfield for three young guys, right? Diego Gomez is 20. David Ruiz is 20. Yannick Bright is 22. I thought it was really exciting. And if we win this game on a, you know, if Luis Suarez scores that goal in the 80th minute and we win 2-1, like, this might be the headline of the episode, is how good that midfield was.
Yeah, after the game, my notes here read the first line that I wrote down: midfield was really good. And it was. I loved the way they were playing. I think they started off really, really well. Diego Gomez and David Ruiz winning that ball, putting in the tackles. I think they caused a few turnovers for NYCFC and won the ball high up the pitch a fair few times. I completely agree with you. I think Diego Gomez is building on more and more, becoming that stable Nancy that we need him to be in that midfield. David Ruiz had one of his better games, I think. I think I was very impressed with the way he was pirouetting a few times. He had a few nice silky touches. He was press resistant as well. There were a couple of times where the NYC midfield were on him and he was able to, you know, defeat that press and pass it on to the right direction. They were taking up really good spaces. Now, all of this was obviously a result of the fact that there was a lot of space in the midfield and it was quite open, because NYC doesn't press as impressively. But we made use of those spaces. The players knew where to be. They were finding the right spots. And Yannick Bright, I think he had a really good game. I agree there were a couple of times where he had to be bailed out for a few errant passes here and there. But that's just contingent on the fact that he's only... This is his first start, I think. Or he's only played two games so far. So the fact that he's come in and he's looked impressive. He's holding the ball really well. He's allowing the pressure to come to him and creating the spaces for the rest of the players around him. I think he's going to be a really crucial piece for this midfield going forward, especially when Redondo's out. And I was really impressed with his performance, and both Diego Gomez and David Ruiz really helped that midfield. And there was another thing that I wanted to point out was the fluidity with which they were playing. So they weren't necessarily stuck in their position. They were moving around a lot, making a lot of pass and goes. But there were also times when David Ruiz was taking up Gressel's position and Gressel was coming back in, supporting the midfield a bit more, getting on the ball. So they knew where they needed to be in terms of switches. They knew how to play with each other, which is a great sign going forward. So there was really good chemistry there. But I like the midfield. I think the midfield was definitely the better part of this game.
David Ruiz this was his first start in the midfield. We really liked what we saw from him in the beginning of the preseason. And listen, he played a lot last year, so we know who he is. But this was his first start this season in the midfield. He's been a wing back. He's been a right back. And it was really good. He was really good. I want to apologize. Diego Gomez turned 21 about 4 days ago. So we got 20, 21, and 22 years old in our midfield. Yannick Bright, he had a ball that he sort of misplayed in the box. That was sort of like a cross that he didn't handle well, but he got bailed out by a really bad shot by the NYCFC player. But yeah, he was good. You know, he had, I think, one poor turnover, but compared to what Jordi Alba did or what Sergio Busquets did, it was nothing. Okay, maybe two. Yeah, dude, I totally agree. I thought they were really good. This is a midfield I could really see going forward. I also think that you can take off David Ruiz or Diego Gomez and put on Benjamin Kramaski and get the same exact balance and style of midfielder or midfield. So I have nothing bad to say, man. I thought they were really good. Young players that really stepped up, controlled the midfield, didn't turn the ball over. I mean, this midfield was better at not turning the ball over than midfields that have had Sergio Busquets in them and have had Federico Redondo in them and have had Julian Gressel in them. So I'm really proud of them. I thought they were really good. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, I think the only key here is going to be consistency. I think that's what I meant about playing players out of their position. If you continue to play David Ruiz in the midfield from the start, that he knows he's going to be in that midfield, whether he's coming off the bench or whether he's starting, play him in the preseason in the midfield, play him in the games that he's needed in the midfield, he would automatically start building the consistency and the chemistry with the players around him. So that's how you get the most out of players. And I agree with you. For someone who's starting their first game in the midfield this season, obviously he's played that position, but I think he did really well. Diego Gomez did really well. And then Yannick Bright had another turnover in the second half where he let the ball loose. The NYCFC player ran towards him, and credit to Sergio Busquets, he had an amazing tackle that stopped them from taking the shot. So, but apart from like a few issues here and there for Yannick Bright, that's completely forgiven because he's just now getting into the, you know, playing style and also just match fitness overall. But yeah, this midfield looks great. And this brings me to my one question. I think this is the perfect time to bring it up. If against Monterrey, we didn't have Sergio Busquets on the team sheet, would that worry you by any means at all?
I'm okay with Sergio Busquets starting or not. You know, I think the problem with Sergio Busquets is if you pair him with Julian Gressel in the midfield. That, if I saw that on the team sheet on Wednesday night, I would be very, very worried.
But that's not my question.
I understand.
My question is, will you be worried if he's not on the team sheet? So I wanna get your honest thoughts about, okay, we saw Frederico Redondo get injured for 8 weeks. That was a big issue for us. Would you have a similar reaction, or would you think this team loses out a lot more if Sergio Busquets is off the bench? And I know this is a controversial opinion. I'm not sure if I made my mind up on it, but I want to get your thoughts. Top line.
I hear what you're saying. This to me is exactly like the Luis Suarez conversation from the preseason, where it's like, yes, I see what you're talking about. I see the things that he's doing. I see him being a little turnover prone. I see him being out of position a few times, and you have to be in the right position if you're not going to be as athletic. But also, he's Sergio Busquets, and I think he's going to come good. I'm not like worried about that. But as far as like moving forward, I'm not worried about that. As far as Wednesday night, like in this one game where he has been a little turnover prone, yeah, I would still be nervous if he wasn't in the starting lineup, because he is Sergio Busquets, and he's like the reason I feel like we have a really solid chance to beat Monterrey and to beat anyone in this confederation is because of the top line talent. And if they play to their potential and to their top level talent, we can beat anyone. So I don't think Yannick Bright can provide what Sergio Busquets provides. And so when you need that next level to be able to win those really tough games, you know, I like Yannick Bright a lot. I think this is exactly the type of game where he can thrive. And going back to our conversation about Tata putting the young guys in positions to succeed, I didn't think he did that with Casas or Afonso today, but I did think he did that with Yannick Bright, where he gave him the whole game. He gave him against an opponent where he wasn't going to be just suffocating under the press. He was going to have a chance to really shine and get a lot of minutes to get comfortable and into the game. I thought he put Yannick Bright in a good position today. But yeah, I'd be worried if we didn't have Sergio Busquets.
Fair enough.
Also, going back to David Ruiz, you mentioned him playing out of position. Obviously, Federico Redondo being injured for the next 2 months helps, but this is a guy that's going to struggle to get game time this year. You got to remember tonight's game, Sergio Busquets was not able to be in the midfield because he had to play at center back. Julian Gressel wasn't allowed to be in the midfield because he had to be the only right winger we had. Kramaski's not available, and Redondo's not available. So it was a lot of things that came together for David Ruiz to even get this start in the midfield. And so I can understand why Tata wants him to try out a right back to see, because he might get more game time this year if he's able to do that. Is there anything else? The refereeing, let's just talk about it for a few minutes quickly, because I don't want to spend too much time on it. That call where he gives a foul to David Ruiz, and David Ruiz has the ball in the final third with no one in front of him and either has a chance to take a shot on goal or dump it off to someone on the other side. That was the worst call we've seen all season. These are the regular referees. The lockout ended over the course of this week, so there's no excuse. We've been trying not to talk about the referees because they have been replacement refs and they're just trying to do their best job, but these guys are the professionals, and it was really bad today or yesterday.
Yeah, it was awful. Not just that one chance. I think just generally they lost control of the game. They're so stop-start. I think another thing that went against us was that once we scored, we weren't able to build that momentum up because it was just so stop and start. There was just so many, you know, naggy fouls, just little fouls here and there that was stopping the game. There was so much time wasting. I think Freeze should have been booked at least once for how much time he was taking on the ball. It was just, yeah, it was a very poor refereeing game. And also just a lot of time wasting, and he let the flow of the game get away from him, which is never fun. So I would definitely say that was a bad performance by the referee.
And listen, I don't want to be too have pink colored glasses on this one. I think that there was definitely some calls for NYCFC that they should have and probably are frustrated about, including maybe the Luis Suarez goal may have gotten a push on James Sands before James Sands falls. I don't know. I didn't see enough replays, but I just didn't think it was a good game from the referee. Anything else you want to talk about before we get into our awards section and do some individual?
We can talk about a lot, but I think it's time to just give their players their plaudits. So, yeah.
Yeah, it was a frustrating result and a frustrating game to watch, but individually there weren't a lot of bad performances. So it'll make this question. Interesting. Last week, I went first and gave out the Miami Man of the Match. This week, it's your turn. Who was Inter Miami's Man of the Match?
I think for me, Julian Gressel. He had a really, really good game. He had that assist. He had two key chances that he created. Overall, he was quite dominant on the ball. That fantastic ball into the box for Luis Suarez that he should have finished. And if he'd gotten on the end of that, that would have been a brilliant assist. I think he was a creative force in this game. He was really making a difference offensively. And one of the better games from Julian Gressel this time around in that right wing position. So I think he did really, really well. And he deserves that Man of the Match award for me, at least on the Inter Miami side of things.
Yeah. A couple things. I agree with you. I think this was his best performance, especially on that right wing, by a significant margin. He was really good in that Orlando City game, but this game was his best performance out wide. I also think the team got worse when he came off the field. He came off in the 77th minute, and the team really struggled. And obviously, Robert Taylor also came off in that, and I think that was also part of it. But those two guys came off, and the offense really, really struggled from that point on. He gets an assist. He was good, man. He was really solid. I don't think NYCFC has a tremendous back line, so I don't want to like claim this is the stepping stone for him to be an elite player out there, but I thought it was a good start, and I think that he's going to build confidence from this, and I think if we win this game, he feels really good about the night. You know, I'm sure he's frustrated because he gets taken off and because we didn't get the win, but I think he's going to look back and feel good about this performance.
For sure. And the one thing that I really liked about this game for him was that you could see the difference that he was trying to make. He was getting on the ball in the midfield. He was making switches with David Ruiz, as I said earlier. He was trying to be that creative outlet for the team, and he wasn't missing at any point in the game, which he has been a few times in the past few games. And I think when he's playing in that midfield with Diego Gomez and Sergio Busquets, you sometimes find him wanting for trying to get on the ball, and I'm wondering where he is and how he's affecting the game. But here you could actually see what he was trying to do and how he was trying to make that difference. So overall, a good game from him, and I think he deserves that Man of the Match this time around.
Yeah, it felt like ownership. He took ownership on trying to be creative in a way that we haven't seen him so far this season. So yeah, I agree. I'm fine with that award. Excuse me. Our next award is the Heron That Flew North. This is the award that goes to the player that was doing the wrong thing, because herons don't fly north, especially Florida herons. So sort of the player that deserves the most criticism for this game. I really struggled, and it's unfortunately my turn to give this award out. I really struggled with who I should give this to, because I didn't think anyone had an individually bad performance overall. I didn't think Leo Alfonso or Pep Casas added much, but it felt really rough to give it to them because they weren't set up to succeed. I also think it's against our rules to give it to Tata Martino. So I'm giving it to Jordi Alba because he didn't have a bad performance, but his individual boneheaded mistake is what gave New York City FC the goal that ended up being the one that caused the draw. He goes out there and he calls off Sergio Busquets, but he has to know that Busquets is out there with him. You know, even if Busquets pulls himself out of position, Jordi Alba has to know that he's out of position and that he's not very athletic to get back in position. And he can't make a pass like that that causes a turnover, and then the right flank or the right side for NYCFC is just completely wide open. There was nothing Ryan Saylor could have done. So I'm giving him the Heron That Flew North for that particular moment, because it was really bad. And for a player of his experience and talent level, you got to be smarter in that moment than to try and make that pass. And, you know, you gifted them a really great opportunity that became a goal.
Yeah, for sure. I think by process of elimination, I think Jordi Alba was the poorest on the pitch. I don't think Busquets had a bad game, despite him being out of position. He was playing in a centre-back role, and he might be culpable a little bit for that first goal, but I think he did decent. He had a really good recovery run where he had that tackle to prevent a chance for NYCFC. Taylor had a decent game. I think Wigan was really good. The midfield, we've already spoken about. Maybe Suarez we could have given to, but he scored that goal. And that singles out Jordi Alba, because I think Jordi Alba was A, directly responsible for that first goal, and I think he wasn't as effective on offense. I think he didn't have a great game particularly overall, so I completely agree with you. I would have also given it to Jordi Alba, and I feel like with his experience, he should have definitely done better, and especially towards the final half of the game where we weren't doing much with the ball, I would have wanted him to try and take the ball on him and do something with it and, you know, try to make a chance happen. But yeah, I think it was just one of those games where he wasn't at his optimum.
I think that's all that needs to be said about that. Let's hear your first award of this episode. Individual.
All right, the first award that I'm giving out is the Float Like a Butterfly, Sting Like a Bee Award.
I'm going to guess you're giving this to Diego Gomez.
No. This one goes to Chelo Wiegand.
Okay.
For the first 15 minutes, I remember texting you and I was like, this is the best right back I've ever seen. He was so good. I think, obviously, without trying to overblow his performance as such, I think he had a really good first game. We have to remember it's his debut. He's only trained with the team twice, but he was fearless in that first half. Like, he was bombing down the pitch. He was getting more far up than I think I've ever seen Yedlin go. So he was getting involved in the final third. He was defensively sound. He was silky at times. He had a few nice touches. Typical Argentinian player, but I think he was really, really good. He was solid as well defensively. He has a lot of strength. He was finding some really good spots. And I think going forward, he's going to be really, really helpful in trying to get turnovers in the press, because he's not afraid to press higher up the pitch and try and stifle the opposition. And he has a pace to get back on defense as well. Float like a butterfly, because I think he had a few really good touches and a few really good moments where he was able to pirouette out of a tight spot and get in a nice attacking position where he laid off the ball a few times, I think, created a few chances. And then sting like a bee, because I think he has that energy and that, you know, feistiness to his play where I think he got a yellow card as well. Yeah, he was just a menace for the NYC players. So on the wing side and the fullback side, I think he definitely outdid Jordi Alba. And I think he had a great first game.
Yeah, he would have been my first award. He is an upgrade on DeAndre Yedlin technically. He is more sound. He's going to play better within structure. I don't know if he has like stinkers in his game. Like, is that going to happen, you know, 2 out of every 5 games where he just really plays poorly, turns the ball over a lot or whatever? I don't know. We'll find out. So I don't want to anoint him as a stud, but the tools are there, man. He's much more technical than anything we've seen as a right back in years, possibly ever at Inter Miami. I mean, he has a chance to be the best right back in Inter Miami history. But it's early to say that, but I thought he was really good today. He had that really nice run around to create an opportunity for David Ruiz or Diego Gomez in the first half. I thought that was really nice. Something we would never see from DeAndre Yedlin. So very positive start. He better be in the starting lineup on Wednesday night. I think he makes this team better. I think he's also the type of player that is going to play well with the superstars that we have, because he has that technical floor that's higher than we saw with DeAndre Yedlin, and he is gonna play better and more structured. So I really like the pickup from what I saw yesterday. I thought he was really good. Good award.
Yeah, actually, and I think another. Yep, go on.
The award I was gonna give him was the best of it, a best ability, because the best ability is availability. DeAndre Yedlin played every single game. He was never hurt, and if Chelo Wiegand does that, he's gonna be. He's going to be really good for this team. So that's the only thing.
Yeah, and I think another thing that he brings to the team is a bit of bite. I think he's not afraid to go into tackles. He had a few times in the first half where he went to ground. So he brings a bit of bite to the game, and I think he'll be the one who probably energize the team when they need to and wake them up if we need to be woken up. But having Jordi Alba on the left and Wiegand on the right bodes really well going forward, because I think it helps having two fullbacks who are competent going forward as well. And then Wiegand is good defensively. So think with the press it will help, but I think he can play really well in the 3-5-2 as well. So overall, good signing so far, and hopefully he'll continue to build on this performance. Your turn.
Let's not talk about the 3-5-2 when we're having such a good time. My first award goes to, or at least it's called, Laconia's Finest. Does that mean anything to you?
Oh, it doesn't. I'm not sure where Laconia is.
Laconia is the province that Sparta is in. And so in ancient Greece, Spartans considered themselves Laconians. And yeah, so they had an L on their shield and everything. So Laconia's Finest.
I'm trying to think, do we have a Greek player on our squad?
No Greek players.
Okay. Is this Diego Gomez?
It is Diego Gomez.
Yeah.
I've been wanting to give him this award for a couple weeks now. He's a warrior. He's so big. He's so strong. He's so athletic. He's fearless. He goes into the opponent without any concern. He causes lots of turnovers. He wreaks havoc in the midfield. He makes it hard for the opposition to do what they want to do offensively. It makes it hard for them to create structure offensively. And now, you know, that's what all Spartans would do, right? That's what all great players like that do. But now he's adding another level to his game where he's getting some of those pinpoint passes that we didn't see last year. And we talked in the preseason that for him, the next step is precision, moving the ball forward, whether it's while shooting or whether it's while passing. We didn't see that a lot last year. He really, when he had opportunities going forward last year, he either put it too short or too far. This year, he's getting it just right. He had like two or three really nice forward passes. He had a nice moment in the box where he sort of just taps it around a defender and then creates another opportunity for Luis Suarez. He is getting, like, it's not super pretty in the final third, but it's really effective and it's becoming more effective. I think he took another step forward in that regard today or last night.
Yeah, I had an award for him, and mine was the Sergio Busquets award to Diego Gomez. And the reason for that was because Sergio Busquets in his prime was super consistent and you knew exactly what you were getting from him. That's the side of the game that I think Diego Gomez is now developing on. I think you know exactly what you're going to get when he's in that midfield. You're going to get some defensive disruption. He's really good with, you know, tackling and getting the ball and interceptions and positioning himself well. But I agree with you completely. He's developed the side of his game where now I can slowly see him as a creator. He's not afraid to get hold of the ball and run with it, but now we are seeing passes as well. He's creating opportunities, getting involved in the offense, and he's turning into this perfect box-to-box midfielder, which I'm really excited to see how that develops throughout the season.
Yeah, I don't want to like pretend like he's becoming a 10 on the ball where you feel really good when he's on the ball, but he's like adding those elements where he's becoming a really dangerous box-to-box guy. We saw him earlier in the season become really effective at making those runs overlapping the forwards and getting into dangerous spots behind the line. Now he's adding some of those really nice through balls into his game. So I was really impressed with him last night. He was really good. He created a few opportunities all by himself. He had a really nice cross also to David Ruiz in the 12th minute where David Ruiz just finds himself open in the back post and gets a header on it. Really good game from Diego Gomez. I think he took another step forward last night.
And he could have easily been a shout for man of the match as well. I don't think he put a foot wrong there in that midfield. So good for him.
He would have been my man of the match if I was in charge of this game. But
yeah.
Let's hear your next award.
All right. This one's a bit of a quirky one. I'm calling it the Jack Sparrow Award. If you want an explanation for it, I can give you that, but it might give away who the award's for. So I want you to guess first.
Let me guess. Is it David Ruiz?
No.
What's the explanation?
Okay, so the explanation for this is Jack Sparrow is someone that nobody expects anything off of. Everyone thinks he's an absolute goof. Everyone thinks he's an absolute, you know, good for nothing. And yet he manages to always surprise everybody and do the job and get stuff done, basically, somehow out of the blue. So based on that explanation, who do you think that award goes to?
Ryan Saylor?
Yes, correct. Okay. That award goes to Ryan Saylor. I think before the start of the game, when we all saw him on the team sheet, we were like, oof, that's an interesting one. And we weren't sure what we were going to get out of him. We weren't sure if he was going to be able to hold his own in that back line. And I think he had a solid game. I think he did really, really well next to Sergio Busquets as well, who's not entirely the best centre-back partnership that you'd want. He was stable, he was reliable, and I think having Wigan next to him was also good for the defensive cover of that side of the field. But yeah, overall, a good game from him. He had a few instances where he had to run back and recover the ball, and he stuck with his man. He's not the quickest like we've seen, but he did the job, and I think he surprised all of us. So I think I wanted to take that opportunity to give him a shout out.
Yeah, he would have been my next award too. He was really good, just like all around solid. I felt like he took command of the defensive line. He was covering for Sergio Busquets. He was covering for Chelo Wigan when he went forward. He didn't put a foot wrong. I mean, you know, he's not going to be a standout player. That's just not in his game. That ceiling is not super high. But if he can put out a performance like this every time he goes out there, you're going to feel really good about him being back there. He was really, really good. Like, he was just very, very solid. So good shout. Good shout.
Yep.
Okay, my final award and the final award of this show is the Barbershop Award.
David Ruiz.
It is not David Ruiz. It is it's a twofer. It goes to Chris Henderson as the first part, but not really. But let me explain. You know, if you're a guy and you're not bald, every couple weeks, every couple months, you got to go to the barbershop. You got to get it cleaned up. And so you just make it part of your routine. And Chris Henderson, every couple months, has made it a part of his routine to just go ahead and find another young midfielder that's really good. And first, it was Benjamin Kramaski, and then it was David Ruiz, and then it was Diego Gomez, then it was Lawson Sunderland, and then it was Federico Redondo, and now it is Yannick Bright, who wins the Barbershop Award because he's just, you know, it's just a routine now. Just go out every couple months and find another young, talented midfielder to add to the collection. Yannick Bright, really, for his first start at this level, I thought was really good. Yes, he put a few feet wrong, but overall, he is really exciting. You can see the tools. It's the positioning that he gets himself in that really impresses me and that makes me feel like he's got a really nice future in this league as a DM. Go ahead and talk to me about Yannick Bright.
Yeah, I think we're all very excited by the prospect that he is. We saw glimpses of it in the preseason, and we were hoping for him to come in to the main 30-man roster as soon as possible. Now that he's in, I'm excited to see him get the minutes. I think with Redondo out, that's going to expedite his trial by fire. I think he's going to have a lot more opportunity in that midfield than we would have thought he would get. But yeah, overall, I think he's a great player. We've spoken about it already. I think this game, he had a good, solid game. A couple of errors here and there, but that's just going to come with time. I think he's going to get rid of those errors eventually. But what I'm really surprised about is the player that he is with regards to the pressing. So he's not afraid to hold the ball and beat the press when he needs to. And he's a very press-resistant player, at least in this particular game. I'm not sure how he's going to hold up against a New York Red Bulls press. But I think he's going to be a really good asset going forward in that DM role. And I think he's the only out-and-out defensive midfielder that we have, apart from Sergio Busquets, who plays that position. But I think he's going to be super, super important as the season goes on.
Well, he's the only true holding midfielder. Busquets, you know, when he plays as a six, he's a deep lying playmaker, and he doesn't have the ability to be a holding midfielder anymore. So yeah, I'm really excited about him, dude. I love the midfield battles, and I think he gives you a weapon that this team desperately needed to restructure your midfield, either off the bench when you didn't get it right to start the game, or in a game like this where you don't have your ideal midfield. You know, Redondo's not going to be available anytime soon. So he gives you that flexibility to create a new midfield that is still balanced and defensively sound. And I think you made a really good point about him getting out of the press. you're not ever going to be sure if you can do that at that level until you get on the field and do it. And so it was really nice to see him have some good moments today. It made me feel a lot better and more comfortable with him moving forward, because oftentimes young midfielders, they don't do that right away, but he has composure and he's really calm in those situations. And I really like that about him. It makes me really excited about his future. I don't know what his role is going to be on this team moving forward this year, just because of the expectations and who else is in this midfield, but I feel comfortable with him in the lineup whenever I see it. Anyone else you want to talk about? Those were sort of the guys that I thought warranted a first, you know, an individual conversation. We talked about David Rubiz a little bit earlier. Drake Callender, solid game, you know, maybe should have done better on the goal, but nothing to be worried about, I don't think. So anyone else you want to talk about?
No, I think we've covered all 11 players practically in some detail. Unfortunate the result went the way it did. I think the performance wasn't bad. The only thing that was lacking was perhaps the final third. Maybe we didn't speak about Robert Taylor, who was potentially missing in this game. He didn't necessarily have that level of impact. I'm not sure why that was. But yeah, hopefully he has a better game going forward, because I think he's going to be starting against Monterrey. So yeah, other than that, I think this is just one of those games where you're going to have to swallow the bitter pill.
Yeah. You know, Robert Taylor, I think, was noticed more when he was off the field than when he was on it, certainly. But that in and of itself means something. Before we go, let's spend about the next 4 minutes or so talking about this Monterrey game on Wednesday. I'm not very confident that Lionel Messi is going to play in this game. And this is like a must-win game. For a game that doesn't decide anything, because I know there's a second leg, this is a must-win game. And probably, you know, away goals are a factor. Probably you want to get a two-goal advantage before you go to Mexico next week or the following week. Federico Dondo is not going to be available. Kramaski's not, probably not going to be available. I don't think he's going to be available. But you do get Chelo Wiginton. How are you feeling about this team?
Yeah, this is a do or die game that I'm not very confident about. The home game is the one where you need to score as many as you can, and you need to be perfect. This next game needs to be the perfect game that Inter Miami's played this season. The away leg is, I won't say it's going to be easier, but I think the strategy for the away leg is more about not conceding and just, you know, being defensively sound. But in this game for the home leg, you need to be both attackingly good and defensively sound. Like, you're all across the pitch, you need to be great. So
you want this team to be defensively sound? Oof. I don't know.
Just put six defenders on the field, man. Just block out Drake Callender's goal completely. But I don't think this leg, I want us to win this first leg by as many goals as we can, but I'm not very confident going into this game, especially because I don't expect Lionel Messi to play.
Yeah, I'm not going to pretend like I've watched a ton of Monterrey this season. I just really, the only two games I've watched were that Cincinnati tie in the last round. But it sounds like they're really confident going into this game, into this tie. They feel like they're the better team. It feels like their fans are going to be really excited for that home leg. So it's going to be a tough environment. The reason we went to El Salvador in the preseason was to prepare for this, but it's not going to be the same. Probably the most similar thing with that trip to Saudi Arabia and those two games, because the environment was very intense there. But I'm nervous. Do you think we're going to get Messi on Wednesday night?
I don't think so. I think it's looking touch and go. So I think we might get him off the bench or something, but I don't think he starts.
Yeah, I'm worried. Maybe Luis Suarez is going to give us a magical night, and maybe Ryan Saylor is going to get us that goal in that game. But until then, I guess we'll just see. Anything else you want to say before I plug our future?
Nah, man. I just want to forget this game and move on.
I think that 20-minute conversation we had about Tata Martino made me feel a lot better about everything, but that was the therapy I really needed. Anyways, guys, thank you for watching. We'll be back Wednesday, likely in the hour before kickoff. And then we'll be back later in the week for a post-game show. And next weekend, we'll be doing everything for the Colorado Rapids game. So until then, thank you guys for tuning in, and we will see you next time. Have a great week, and hopefully the next game goes better than this one. Bye-bye.